COO, San Francisco, by my baby!
Shibba shibba! Shibba shibba! Shibba shibba!
Let me in!
Shibba shibba!
I wanna be closer to you!
Shibba shibba!
Open up your soul!
Shibba shibba!
Let me find that part of you! The part that nobody ever knew!
Let me touch your mind!
Oh! Why don't you let me in? Let me be the first to ever touch your mind!
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. One of the things we as Bay Area residents enjoy are the arts. We're very fortunate to live where we do and to have so many talented people creating things and so many people from around the world who want to come here and share their arts with us. So we're lucky that there's a San Francisco International Arts Festival happening, and it's just around the corner. Here to talk about it, I'd like to welcome Andrew Wood. Hello.
Hi, Marilyn. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thank you for being on the show. How many years have you been doing the Arts Festival?
This is the 21st. It's been 2003 was the first one.
Wow. And do you know whose brainchild it was and how it all came to be?
Well, it was when I was working. I used to be the director of ODC Theatre.
Oh, that's
and
right.
Nobody from ODC Theatre had ever been to a booking conference called APAP in New York because the Wythe Theatre was so small. But we figured out a way that I could go to APAP, and it's the largest booking conference in the world. And then you realize just how much stuff is out there and how much stuff just doesn't come to the United States, but then how much of that stuff that comes to the United States doesn't ever get to San Francisco. So I just thought it would be a really good idea to try and have a platform where we presented local artists with international artists that nobody had ever seen before. And that was the spark for the festival, was doing that, and also trying to involve local artists and international collaborations and those sorts of projects. But to sort of do an annual event where there was a concentration of these things happening, and everyone was able to sort of see each other's work and have an understanding of what artists were saying in different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. That was the inspiration for it.
Nice. And one of the great things about youth is that you have no idea just how hard or how heavy the undertaking is when you have these great ideas, so you just go ahead and do it.
Yeah, you go ahead and do it without knowing what you're doing.
Exactly.
And over the course of years, you kind of learn on the job, which is what we've done.
Yes, but it's the beauty that it doesn't occur to you that you don't know what you're doing, so you're willing to do it, whereas if you're much older, you're like, oh, that just sounds like so much work. You might put it on the back burner.
And in the end, you become part of it becomes a cycle. Mm-hmm. So we know what we're supposed to be doing at every part of the year in order to prepare for something else. Everything has its deadline and its timeline and its cycle. And so, you know, I know I travel for 6 months of the year, pretty much, well, 6 or 7 months of the year after the festival's done.
Mm-hmm.
But then I stop traveling at the end of January because I know I've got too much work to do here.
Right.
And there's no more, I can't go out and see any more international artists for the following year. And then we apply to the National Endowment for the Arts to support international artist fees, and that deadline is February. So and that's not for the coming festival, that's for the festival the following year.
Wow.
So I have to have my list by January for the festival that's going to happen in 17 months after that.
Wow, there's a lot of moving parts that you really have to keep track of, or it will all just crumble
around
you. Yeah,
but like I said, it's a cycle. I know when, at what point I am on each part of the cycle. And so for local artists, what we do is we work to raise money, but then by November, 6 months ahead of time, we have to decide if we've got enough money to present that artist or not, and then make the decision that this is what we're going to do. We're going to go ahead, and then we start marketing it. For the international artists, we try and get them their visas, and for the local artists and everybody, we just start marketing the festival.
Yeah, I remember.
We send our first email to the media in November.
And I remember you telling me just what how difficult it was to get the visa portion in order. Has that eased at all?
It has a little bit. I mean, it was always bad, but it was always difficult. But at least, you know, before Trump, their mission was to get people into the country. Trump changed it, so their mission was to keep people out of the country.
Okay.
And so it just became exponentially worse under him. But then when Biden got into office, I mean, the highest priority of any president is not non-immigrant visas. So and once Trump let the dogs out, it was very hard to get them back in their cages again, because they felt him, you know, they just felt emboldened to behave as badly as they wanted to.
Mm.
And so we've been fortunate this year. Everyone's in, and we didn't have any really major problems.
Okay.
So it was just one of those lucky years, I guess. And we only did three as well, so there wasn't as many as usual. This is our first year presenting international artists since before the pandemic.
Oh.
Last year it was all local, because it takes, like I said, it takes me 2 years to find them and then raise the money and get the visas and everything. And you know, when in 2021 I wasn't out looking because we were all locked down.
Got it.
So it's taken us that long to have the cycle play itself out. And so we already know who we want for next year, and now we're just waiting for to see how much money is going to come in.
Okay.
And when this year's festival is over, I'll be heading to Barcelona and Montreal to see two festivals for things for 2026.
What's happening in Barcelona?
It's the Grec Festival. It's a really brilliant festival, actually, but it's supported entirely by the city of Barcelona.
Okay.
So they have a lot of money.
Yeah, okay.
They have a lot of money. It's a beautiful festival, and I go there and I try to see as much work as I can. And then in Montreal, it's a circus festival.
Oh, okay.
So I go there to see if we can check out some circus to bring that to San Francisco as well.
Wow.
And then it's off to Edinburgh. I always go to Edinburgh in August
for the Fringe Festival.
That's the largest festival in the world. And so it's about 3,000 or more artists all performing at the same time.
Oh, I have a friend who's going to be in the Fringe Festival, but that's neither here nor there. Let's talk about the San Francisco International Arts Festival that's happening, that's starting May 1st. And
that's
the
right.
Theme is
Wednesday.
And the theme is In Diaspora. Now, a lot of people don't know what a diaspora is.
A diaspora is people who moved outside where their original land was.
Mm.
And they're living in the diaspora outside of the country, and we use it in diaspora ID for the new majority, and it's really about the shifting demographics of this country and also of other countries as well, and what that means. And you know, for us, we think it's transcendent. We think that this country becoming a majority people of color country, and but being a very very mixed and very very diverse country is really one of its strengths, and we really want to be able to speak to that, to say that this is what this kaleidoscope of peoples looks like, and this is how they present their themselves, and this is how they present their work, and we just think this is the good side of America. You know, there's a very bad one as well, but there's something about the diversity of the peoples that live here, and the strength that they bring, and the knowledge that they bring, and the culture that they bring. And I think, you know, in San Francisco, we are so fortunate to have that. And now that we're back in the Mission District, it's probably the richest and most culturally vibrant neighborhood in the city. And I know there'll be people that will disagree with me, you know, a lot about that, but we were at Fort Mason for a very long time, and I'm really grateful to Fort Mason, because we really learned, when we said we learned our craft, we learned it at Fort Mason, how to run multiple venues. But they lost so much money during the pandemic that they just couldn't afford to host us.
Okay.
So we moved back to the Mission, and it's just that, you know, there are many differences, but it's just the vibrancy of the Mission is just electric, and it picks up on the festival program and all the local venues that we're part of now.
Well,
and is really energizing.
Well, talk a little bit about the lineup that you've got, because it's 12 days. And
12 days, 50 companies. Yeah.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about the acts and the
Well,
art
we're opening
industry.
With Cassandra Production. They're from Denmark.
Okay.
Their artistic director, Annika Lewis, was actually born in San Francisco, but her parents emigrated out to Sweden. She's part Swedish,
okay.
And now she's based in Copenhagen. But their performance piece, it's titled The Soul Catcher. It's the Soul Catcher Unmasking the Modern Predator, and it's about narcissism and narcissistic disorder. And it's a dance theater piece, and it's based on her own experience when she was in a relationship with one of these types of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a lot of it's about mental health and about escaping from these types of situations and how you never know how to understand people when they're in that type of situation or people who are behaving that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a really skillful dance theater, multidisciplinary piece, and they're making their U.S. debuts. So we're really pleased about that. The following day, this is going to be Mikhail Belensky. She's from Canada, from Montreal, and she has a piece called Warm Up, and she uses a bicycle, a stationary bicycle, to generate the power for her show, and. And it's really a statement about how do we treat the environment, or how are we addressing climate change, and how do we reassess our relationship to nature?
Uh-huh.
And so she does it as a demonstration, how does art take its ideas and use its ideas to push the point about the environment. And then the following week, we have, I'm just talking about the internationals first, we have, it's strange for us, because we're actually part of a national tour.
Mm.
Generally speaking, we present artists that are not presented by other presenters, because they've never been here before, so everyone else is kind of wary of presenting them. But I saw this company at Edinburgh, and they're called the Fishamble Company. It's Fishamble, the new play company.
Uh-huh.
And they have this piece called King. It's a solo performance by a gentleman named Pat Kinnevan.
Okay.
And he plays, and it's also about mental health. He plays a man who's got some personality disorders, and so he's very reclusive, and he only goes out of the house to make essential journeys, to buy essential things, and to perform as an Elvis Presley impersonator. So that's coming out next. They were in New York, then they went to Los Angeles, and they'll be coming to us next week now.
And what are their names again?
Fishamble.
Fishamble, okay.
Yeah. All and right. Their director is actually, his name is Jim Cullerton, and he's going to be teaching a workshop for artists, professional artists who want to figure out how to make their shows more tourable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called Your Show in a Bag, and it's on Thursday, May the 10th. It's a free workshop for professional artists. It's 5 hours, so you've got to kind of mark your day out to do it. But he's really good. They've taught this workshop all over the world to professional artists, and it's really about, again, how do you take a concept for a show,
mm-hmm.
but make it so that it's something that's designed to actually go on the road or tour. So there's a couple of places left there for that, but that's Jim Cullerton on Thursday, Thursday, May the 9th. I apologize.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and the locals, we have most of the festival is local artists, and we have some really amazing companies that are all from the Bay Area,
mm-hmm.
and it's interesting because since we've moved. When we used to be a theater and dance festival primarily,
mm-hmm.
And then when we went to Fort Mason, we had a dedicated music venue, so we started adding more and more music, and now 50% of the program is music, and so we have some really brilliant artists that are going to be with us this week if people want to come. We have on Saturday we have Neblinas del Pacifico playing at the Community Music Center. They're an amazing group. And they do play marimba music from the Pacific coast of Colombia.
Uh-huh.
And we have Melody of China. We'll also be at the Community Music Center on Sunday. Then on Saturday, there was used to be a band, there are a trio, a jazz trio called Vidya. mm-hmm. and they're getting back together again. It's like a reunion concert, so they're performing at the Community Music Center. In terms of dance, this week we have... it's funny that Elvis is a recurring theme. Joe Landini has a piece titled Freddie versus Elvis.
Okay.
It's like
Freddie Krueger?
Like Freddie Mercury versus Elvis. Oh, okay. So it's a comparison of the music of Freddie mm-hmm. Mercury and the music of Elvis Presley from a gay perspective.
Okay.
So it's a queer perspective on Freddie and Elvis. And he's sharing the bill with Callie and Co., who have a piece titled Perfect Response. And then we have a triptych, Aura Fishbeck Dance. Rosemary Hannon and Miriam Wolodarski have a piece titled This Is It. And there's also Alma Esperanza Cunningham Movement are all going to be at Dance Mission. So we have a contemporary dance program there.
Wow.
And in theater this week, I've talked about Cassandra and I've talked about Mikhail, but we also have Ethnotech.
Mm-hmm.
That's a local company, and they have a piece titled Shadows and Secrets. It's about Nancy Wong's grandfather. Nancy is one of the directors of Ethnotech,
uh-huh.
and her grandfather was a very wealthy restaurateur in mob-era Chicago.
Oh.
But then he mysteriously died. He fell down a dumb waiter, and then everyone thought it was an accident, but then there was all these rumors throughout the family that he was actually pushed, and so Nancy's embarked on a murder mystery to find out what happened, and that's Shadows and Secrets. That's playing at the Mission Cultural Center, and what we're doing is there's about 10 venues in the festival,
uh-huh.
But we directly manage 4 of them, and so we have one for theater, one for dance, one for music, and we have one for you know, things that don't quite fit anywhere else. And then what we're doing also is we're working with venues where we're kind of more matchmaking,
okay,
and then we're not producing the event, we're just sort of helping to promote it and make sure that the artist is in the right space. So this week we have, and it's interesting because we're kind of doing this in an informal way this year, just to try and test how this is going to work, and then we'll try and do it in a more comprehensive way next year once we've learned lessons and things. So we've approached places where we have relationships. So many years ago, I used to work at El Rio.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went to El Rio and said, well, would you like to participate in the festival? And can we offer you some artists that you might be interested in? So we talked about that. So the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble, this is a free show, are going to be there this Thursday. And it's the first time the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble has ever been to El Rio. And they're going to be out on the patio, sort of underneath the watchful eye of Carmen Miranda, that big sort of collage on the wall.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to be playing in the patio, and it's going to be a really just interesting event to sort of see how the place where salsa bands normally perform instead will have a classical music trio there. And that evening as well, it's going to be a CD release party for Shauna Virago.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the evening at El Rio.
Well, this
Friday we're also working with Bisap Baobab.
Ooh.
and again, one of our board members was their attorney when they won their music license and their new venue. So we teamed up with them, and so they're presenting Agua Pura on Friday, and then on Sunday they have Fanfare Zambaletta are going to be performing on Sunday, and that's also a free show, though there is a VIP ticket as well.
Well, Andrew, it sounds, all of it is amazing, and I want to come and see every bit of it.
You should.
I'm going to try.
I haven't said the website yet.
Please, I was going to ask.
The festival's website is www.sfiaf.org, and our phone number is 415-399-9554.
And for our listening audience who, because we just have like 1 minute left, for the listening audience who wants to buy tickets, where can they buy tickets?
Go to our website, sfiaf.org, and they're there, or they can call the festival number, 415-399-9554, and we'll happily help them buy their tickets.
All right. Well, Andrew Wood, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Looking forward to seeing many of the things that are happening at the San Francisco International Arts Festival this year.
Thank you, Marilyn. Thank you so much.
Thank you. People of Earth, this is your opportunity. The San Francisco International Arts Festival, it's just there waiting for you to go to it. ¶¶ Of course, I had to slip some Miles Davis in there. That's Motel, and that is from the Elevator to the Gallows soundtrack. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Speaking of super talented art that happens in San Francisco, the San Francisco Summer Concert Series in Golden Gate Park just started, and there's like a whole bunch of musicians who their whole mission is just to make you happy by making themselves happy by playing music at the Golden Gate Park Band Show. Here to talk about it from the Golden Gate Park Band, I'd like to welcome Mark Nemoyten. Hello.
Hi, Marilyn. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the show today. So, Mark, how long have you been a musician?
Oh, gosh. Well, if you count when I first started playing...
I do.
I was 9 years old, and so it's almost 60 years. Yeah,
wow. So let's travel back in time to when you were 9 years old. Did you get to pick the instrument, or did your parents say, here's what you're playing?
Well, I was fortunate. I grew up in a musical household. My dad was a music teacher, and I heard him music all the time, and heard him playing. And I picked the trumpet.
Oh, okay.
The funny thing is that a few weeks after I started, I said, "Wow, this is harder than I thought it was going to be." And I asked him if I could switch to the trombone, which is what he played, and he said, "No."
Did he give you a reason, or it was just like, no?
He said, no, I think you need to give it a little more time.
Mm. Oh, because it's just been, what, like 2 weeks or something?
Yeah.
You thought you'd be a virtuoso just like that?
Yeah.
Because that's the way kids think. So when you were playing, did the trumpet eventually grow on you, or did you have your teen rebellion where you're like, I'm not playing music anymore, I'm going to do this?
It's funny, because it was something that I was pretty good at an early age, and it was something I did. It was the one thing I did that I think I got the most recognition for. So that was encouraging. Mm-hmm. As a teenager, no, I grew up, in the late 60s, early 70s, and I was not going to do what my dad did. That was, for certain. I was a rebellious teenager, but a couple of years after I had a few friends who I still kept playing. Mm-hmm. I still kept playing at a local college, and I took some classes, and some friends talked me into joining a band that was touring in clubs in the Midwest where I lived, and that kind of got me hooked back into it.
Okay.
I didn't look back after that. So
did your dad secretly rejoice when you came back to music?
Oh yeah, he was very happy about that.
All right, so fast,
and we got to play together a number of times, so that was
yay. So fast forward, it's now, 2024, and you're part of a Golden Gate Park band. Tell me a little bit about the band.
The Golden Gate Park band is as far as we know, is the oldest cultural organization in San Francisco.
Really?
It goes back to 1882.
Wow.
And, you know, not that long after Golden Gate Park opened, they built a little bandstand, and they had a small concert band.
Mm-hmm.
And it continued up until the present time. And the band used to give concerts year round, every Sunday and certain holidays. And and they're always free. It started in 1882, and if you go on our website, you can see some photos, or you can look up photos of the original band shells, which are in different parts of the park. But then in 1900, they built the current band shell. It was financed by, it's called the Spreckles Temple of Music, is the technical name of it. And it was built with the provision that any music or any performance presented there had to be free to the public.
Oh, I like that.
And Golden Gate Park Band was kind of the resonant group of that. And it's designed really for live acoustic music. We've had other guest artists come in. Like we have a band festival every year. And everybody's always blown away by how nice it sounds there. It was designed for that kind of group.
I happen to have been in the park this past Saturday, and we looked over, and you guys were just about to start, and there was a great big audience there. And so how did it feel to do your kickoff?
Yeah. Well, it was Sunday. We were only there on Sundays.
Yeah.
And
that's what I meant.
It was fun. The band has gone through some changes recently.
In what way?
And like a lot of other things since the pandemic.
Oh,
early in the pandemic, or right before the pandemic, our funding was kind of pulled.
Mm.
And of course, during the pandemic, we didn't have any funding because we weren't able to present concerts.
Sure.
But the upshot of it was the band used to be run as a sole proprietorship. Mm-hmm. Basically, the Parks Department would hire a conductor. They didn't hire, and the conductor would put the band together, and he basically owned the band and was responsible for running the whole operation. Well, we got into a situation where we found out we could not operate that way anymore. And so some of the musicians got together and we incorporated as a nonprofit. And so now it's sort of, we have a board, and it's run mainly by the musicians.
Okay.
And we actually hired the conductor, Dr. Herman Gonzalez, is our current music director, and he was an associate conductor last year, and he started as our regular music director this year. And so we're now a nonprofit. We get a majority of our funding from the Grants for the Arts, but we do need a lot of additional funding to operate. It's a 30-piece professional concert band. And we're all, you know, members of the American Federation of Musicians, and really skilled, highly skilled musicians able to put together a program. We get the music ahead of time, but we have just an hour rehearsal to put together a 90-minute concert.
Oh, wow.
So
that's ambitious.
We have to have players that can really sight read music and are very experienced. And, you know, we have a lot of conservatory graduates and people from prestigious music schools all over the country who play in the band. And so our first concert on Sunday, and to get back to your question, it was great fun. We have a lot of new members in the band, a lot of young players. And I had so much fun because the band just sounded amazing. And we're just looking forward to, you know, and that was just our first concert of the year. So, yeah, I highly recommend, you know, to your audience that they come check us out. It's every Sunday. We April 28th was our first concert of the season. We go through the first Sunday in October, October 6th. And we also play on 4th of July and Labor Day. And each program is a little different, and we have themes throughout the year. Next year, and this is a tradition that goes back, you know, I started playing as a substitute as a young musician in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. And so I'm one of the old timers in the band now.
Okay.
And one of the things that's really cool about the group and has always been there is that they always try to do collaborative concerts with different cultural groups mm-hmm. throughout the city.
Mm-hmm.
So this coming Sunday is going to be with a Polish cultural organization.
Oh, okay.
And so we do works by Polish composers, Chopin and Weinberger and people like that. And mm-hmm. then there'll be folk dances and songs from that culture. And, you know, a few weeks later, we do an Armenian program. Ooh. We'll do a Juneteenth program. It doesn't fall on a Sunday, but it'll be on the 16th. We do a Pride concert. We do concerts. We do a Ukrainian solidarity concert in late August,
uh-huh.
Which was the last few years we've had a huge crowd for that. And different cultures, but this is something the band's been doing for as far back as we have records, that they do collaborative programs because they had to do so many programs
mm-hmm,
every year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a way to connect with the community. So if you go to our website, which is the simplified URL is parkband.org.
Okay.
We have our whole schedule up there, and there's kind of a summary schedule on one page, and then we have a calendar where as programs are sort of sketched out ahead of time, but mm-hmm. the specifics are usually not there until a few weeks before the actual concert.
Oh, okay.
But it's and our goal, our new board of directors, one of our big goals is to get the word out about the band, because I always talk to, you know, I'll tell people I play with the Golden Gate Park Band, and the reaction is usually, huh, what's that? Or are they still there, you know, if they've heard of it?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And, you know, publicity was not, in previous years, our old conductors, you know, had to run the pretty much the entire operation themselves,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't have a lot of time to do publicity,
sure.
and they sort of had secured funding, and they didn't worry about, you know, having a big audience, but we think it's important to get
yeah.
the word out about
yeah.
the group,
yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
we really appreciate being able to talk to your listeners.
Well, also, too, I know that you're doing a wide range of music, and it's a great way to introduce children, because, you know, kids are just, I've seen so many things where the little tiny children, doesn't matter what genre of music it is, they love it, and they dance to it, and they just have such a good time. So, you know, the fact that it's out in the park when someone can just unexpectedly come across it is quite lovely.
It is. And that's a big part of our audience. People who are just happen to be in the park that day,
mm-hmm.
families with kids, we do have special kids concerts. We're doing one concert that we've been doing the last few years. Let's see, this year it's going to be on July 14th. It'll be an all Disney program. It just draws lots of families. We're doing a few weeks later, we're doing just a kids concert,
okay.
Just specializing in music just for children. But yes, you're absolutely right. We'll have families come in with kids of all ages, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, we'll see them dancing and or marching to a march, or having a great time, and we encourage that.
Well, I want to ask also, what time do the concerts start?
They all start at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
And they go about 90 minutes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And then
1 to 2:30. We usually don't have an intermission. It's just kind of straight through.
Okay. And for people who don't know, what's the difference between a band and an orchestra?
A band is all wind and percussion instruments. So we have no strings.
Okay.
We have no violins. And this goes back to the, the concert band was the most popular form of music in the United States, you know, around the turn of the last century.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is that, violins and string instruments are a little delicate to be played outside.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you could have a band and entertain a lot of people and not worry about the violins getting, falling apart or damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good outdoor music. It projects.
Right, so, right.
And there's a long tradition of concert band music, which that's one of the other things that we want to do is promote the fact that there's a lot of great music written for concert band. And when people come and hear it, they're blown away. And there are a lot of, band nerds,
mm-hmm.
people who grew up playing in bands,
mm-hmm.
who haven't had a chance to hear that music since they were kids, mm-hmm. and they come through and they're excited about it. They're excited to hear this music and played by professional musicians. It's kind of a thrill.
Do you ever get people or kids or whatever who come up like after they've heard it, they want to join the band?
Yes, yes. Or they want to join a band or they want to learn an instrument.
Mm-hmm,
anyway,
mm-hmm.
People who want to learn about the music and about playing the instruments.
Okay.
Definitely.
So one more time for our listening audience, what days and times for the summer concert series and where can they go to find out what you'll be or what the theme is for that particular day?
So Golden Gate Park Band, our concerts are on Sunday afternoons we're having a concert on May 5th, and every Sunday, except one, we're not going to be there on September 29th. But other than that, we'll be there through October 6th, every Sunday.
Okay.
Plus, we'll be there on the 4th of July,
mm-hmm.
where we do, an all-American type program. And then, and Labor Day.
Okay.
And all concerts are all at 1 o'clock. Our website is, you can go to goldengateparkband.org or just parkband.org. Either one will get you there.
Okay.
And you can learn all about the history of the band. We have biographies of our musicians, little blurbs about each of them. We have history of the band and a lot of interesting information for your listeners if they want to learn more about it. And a complete calendar with the programs. Each program is up there.
Excellent. Well, Mark Nemoyten, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, and I look forward to hearing more of your concerts.
Great. Well, come by and say hello anytime.
I will. Thank you.
All right.
All right. People of Earth, this is your opportunity. Golden Gate Park and the band shell. Go check it out. Maybe you want to hear a little bit of what they do. I don't know. We'll see.
Thank you.
Oh, I desperately want to play more of that because they add a jitterbug in there somewhere. That's the Light Cavalry Overture played by the Golden Gate Park Band that's going to be doing free stuff on Sundays for a long time, so you can go check them out. You know what else is fun and free and is open to everybody? The San Francisco Public Library. It's that time again. It is time for our librarianista to wow us with all the fun stuff that's going to be happening at the San Francisco Public Library. Here to talk about it, the librarianista du jour, Darren Hiber. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. So first of all, tell me, how did you come to be someone who works at a library?
So I was a high school English teacher and had the opportunity to work in the school library there and realized that that was something that would be really satisfying and amazing for me. I studied to become a school librarian, and when I got out of library school, discovered that they were cutting school librarians left and right.
Oh.
Ended up in public libraries, and I've pretty much never looked back. Serving the public in this capacity is just amazing.
So tell me what it was about working at a library that appealed to you, as, you know, when you were teaching.
It was a few things. I was giving you the short version of the story, but I was working in a school where I actually saw, unfortunately, a lot of burnout from my coworkers in the English department. That department in particular is very demanding, and it was difficult to see and experience. But I had a neighbor teacher who was not burnt out. She was still very enthusiastic about it, still invigorating, encouraging, and just a wonderful support partner. And she had actually recommended considering going to the libraries, where you have an opportunity to focus on critical thinking skills, and you really get to engage with a much wider range of students over multiple years versus that single year of concentrated time with students. And so I just thought it was an excellent recommendation. It really aligned with what I cared about as an educator. And even though I haven't had the opportunity to work in school libraries in a paid capacity, I still had the option to be a teen librarian for many years and really got to have that same growth experience and that connecting experience with the youth.
And I would imagine that when you, because you're working at the library, like, it's sort of the people who are going to the library and hanging out at the library, they also love the libraries. They're not just there. You know, they're not just parked there. The kids that are going there want to be there and enjoy the library.
I'd say we get everyone, and that's kind of the beauty of the public library, is it is open and accessible to everyone, as long as we're all allowing space for each other. And there are some people who come here because it's like a default space for them. It's the only free space available to them where they don't feel pressure to buy something or engage in a particular way.
Yeah.
And so it really has become just such a valuable resource for them, and maybe it's not even library enthusiasm particularly that draws them in, but what the library offers, even just in terms of that safe space, is incredibly valuable. We do have some youth who get whose grown-ups tell them to, you know, to use the library for a period of time as a safe space. And even those youth, though, I think even if they aren't coming in necessarily because it is their immediate joy or the thing that they're really looking to do, spending time with us, getting to know the staff, getting comfortable with the collection and feeling more ownership over the space, it really does become a special place for them ultimately. And one that, you know, I hear many adults I talk to, you know, always get so excited to bring their youth back into the library because the library's meant so much to them when they were growing up.
Yeah, I never thought about it before, but I was one of those kids that went to the library every day because I had to wait for my parents to come home. And the staff, you know, it only just this second occurred to me, like, oh, the staff was looking out for me. Like, I was one of the kids that they knew to keep an eye on, you know, because, but I loved books and, you know, and you just sort of gravitate toward the love of the book, or at least I did. So, I guess I'm grateful for all of those librarians who were surreptitiously watching out for the kids who are in the library.
Well, keeping out and looking for ways to engage and mm-hmm. provide opportunities for growth. I mean, we love connecting with our community, learning from them, and learning what you want to see in your library.
Mm-hmm.
I just offered a program last week where I was actually working with 7 older adults, and one of them, an early comment was, this is not my mother's library, you know.
That's true.
It's not that quiet space. It's active. It's engaged. There are lots of different learning opportunities and different ways for the community to connect with each other
mm-hmm.
that they maybe have not tried to explore on their own or felt comfortable exploring without a little extra support.
So tell me which branch of the library you work at and what your main role is there.
So I work at the Glen Park Branch Library. I've been here for about a year and a half, and I came in as the branch manager.
Okay.
I am also a children's services librarian, so I offer story times, children's programs, and I'm very lucky as here in this library, I really try to encourage all of our staff to develop programming that they get joy and pleasure out of
mm-hmm.
and to ensure that the populations they're individually responsible for are receiving nourishing content and opportunities, but also programming outside of those immediate age groups to
mm-hmm.
to the audiences that would also respond well to what their own personal interests are. So I get to program a wide range, which is really nice, and it makes me feel so lucky.
Okay. So the Glen Park, I know that most of the branches have a community that they... I'm not going to say that they tailor it to, but they know their community. So
yeah.
What's the community around Glen Park that you try to serve?
I mean, it really is, Glen Park, a little bit into the Diamond Heights area. It's so interesting because this part of the city
mm-hmm.
is one that I think is undiscovered by a lot of people who live here, and it's amazing. They've got a gorgeous village with some wonderful businesses, and then we've got Glen Canyon Park with an amazing recreation center that includes a climbing wall.
Oh.
The community that lives here, there's a lot of long-established community,
mm-hmm.
And they have immense pride for their neighborhood and real support for their neighbors. I love seeing how many people put up public art in front of their houses, how many people put up little free libraries and things, and they're looking for ways, again, to connect with those community members
mm-hmm.
and just create joy around as you walk around. We really do reach out to all the different age groups, our local schools, and we try to be as strong a resource for this community, immediate community, as possible.
Okay, and how do people who don't live in the Glen Park area, how do they normally get to your library?
Well, I appreciate you asking that. And that's one thing I wanted to mention about our youth as well. We're at a really excellent transportation hub.
Uh-huh.
We've got a lot of Muni lines, bus lines that run right by us, and we're right at the Glen Park BART station as well.
Oh.
Which, if you've not seen it, it is a pretty unique BART station. It's brutalist architecture, and it really stands out as compared to many of the others. I recommend visiting that. We're a short walk from Glen Canyon Park, as I mentioned,
mm-hmm.
and our community members have put in volunteer time every month to build this gorgeous path that connects almost directly from the library right up to the park. They're planting native species. They've got oaks they're growing from seed, and they're really doing what they can to beautify the space
mm-hmm.
and also reclaim it from all the invasive species, which is really nice.
Mm. Oh, when you're walking along, how do you know which ones are the invasive species?
That's a great question. It takes some time to learn those. I actually taught a workshop just last week. It was called An Introduction to iNaturalist.
Mm-hmm.
If you've not used this app, it's amazing. The California Academy of Sciences was responsible for it for many years.
Uh-huh.
And it gives you the opportunity to use your phone to identify plants and animals, insects, just anything natural around you, which is really nice. And that can help you learn some invasives from some others. Or just I recommend coming and volunteering at some of these weekend events that they offer. We have a few different organizations right here in the community that do that. And people will be happy to show you what is invasive and what you're planting that is native.
And what's the name of that app you were talking about?
Oh, and the name of that app was iNaturalist.
And that used to be, that was put out by...
It was with the California Academy of Sciences, okay, and cool. Just last year they became their own independent nonprofit.
Very cool.
It is really amazing, very fun. And the program that I offered last week was such a success, I'm definitely going to offer it again in a few months after we get past our summer stride season.
Okay. Well, so I have some listeners who don't know what summer stride is.
Ooh, summer stride is amazing. It's an opportunity for youth, adults, everyone to encourage themselves to read and learn.
Uh-huh.
We encourage everybody to read for at least 20 hours. This year, we're trying out something new and fun for adults,
okay.
And we'd love for you to come visit your libraries to learn a little more about it.
Uh-huh.
But participating in library programs also counts toward that time. And after you have accomplished that, come back into the library. Let us know you've done your learning this summer. And we'll be happy to offer you a prize. We have some amazing tote bags that we're going to give out.
Okay.
As well as some other fun new surprises you've never seen before.
Uh-huh.
So we do recommend that you start visiting your libraries June, July, and August to learn more.
I love that. Because there are a lot of people out there who love reading, and for them, it's like you're giving them something for free just for doing something that they love.
It's exactly right. It's such an easy lift for people. It's so much fun. What's also nice is our libraries are trying to help build your home libraries as well.
Mm.
And many of the library branches you visit during this time will have free books to give away.
Ooh,
so come in and ask to see if they have free books available. Obviously, it's while supply last, but we're going to do our best to keep our library stocked. And don't forget, too, that our libraries are fine free currently. And so when you check out books from the library, just mm-hmm. make sure you get them back, or
yeah.
DVDs or
yeah, yeah.
CDs. Make sure you get them back, or even vinyl, which we have now, too.
And also for people who maybe were afraid to go to the library because they had big fines, just return your books.
That's right.
Just return
your books
them.
And come talk to us. I was one of those people. I did not return to a library for 3 or 4 years after high school because I had such hefty fines. But I made my way back, and you can too.
And now you work for the library.
And now I work for the library. That's exactly right.
So for the Glen Park Branch Library, is there any event coming up that you want to make sure our listening audience knows about?
Absolutely. I'm really, really, really hopeful we get to see you out here Saturday, May 18th. From 1 to 5 for our open house. We're going to have an amazing lineup of events with some great partners.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to start off the day with Drag Story Hour at 1 o'clock and mm-hmm. face painting. Arian Press, which is one of the only foundries in America and a hand-printed letter press, is going to come and help you letter press your own prints. And
oh,
it's going
cool.
to be a really excellent experience there. We've got our own Glen Park Flute Duo that's going to play at 3 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
And we're also offering a bingo scavenger hunt, and we're working with Bay Bingo to make that happen. Out in front of the library all day, you're going to find the Museum of Craft and Design with some great crafting options for you.
Uh-huh.
We're going to have button making, light snacks, books, giveaways, and some other fun surprises. And we'd really love to see you out for that. Again, that's May 18th from 1 to 5 o'clock. We do have some other great options as well. Even this Wednesday, May 1st, we've got Katie Kwan, who's an Asian American artist and educator,
mm-hmm.
who's going to teach you how to start your own comics and create your own zines. And that's this Wednesday, May 1st from 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock. We've started karaoke sing-alongs on Sundays once a month, and we'll have that on May 5th. We've got teen graphic novel book clubs, special story times. We're inviting our local police department to join us, junior readers clubs. I do a pajama story times Wednesday evenings, May 8th and 22nd from 7 to 7:30.
Uh-huh.
Come with your pajamas. We've got Hawaiian presenters on May 15th and so much more. If you visit sfpl.org/events,
mm-hmm.
you'll get to see all the amazing things that are happening at Glen Park and all of our branch libraries.
Well, I just have one more question. which is for the 18th with all of the letterpress stuff. Do you need to sign up or can you just show up?
Please just show up. Come on out. And one thing I did forget to mention is it's also the debut of our tiny art show.
Uh-huh.
We gave out 240 3-inch by 3-inch canvases to the community, and we're hopeful that people are going to bring those all back for us so we can show off your beautiful artwork.
That's
and we're going to
awesome.
debut that May 18th with the open house starting at 1 o'clock.
That is awesome. Well, Darren Hiber, I could, you know, talk about what's going on at the library for hours, but sadly we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. And there's so many things that you talked about that I'm hoping that I get a chance to go and enjoy in person.
Thank you so much for letting me join you. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to us catching up again.
Excellent. All right. People of Earth, it's the San Francisco Public Library. There's so much going on there. If you just go to their website, sfpl.org, you can find out all of the stuff that's happening. You can go and you'd be surprised just how thorough and enjoyable it all is. It's just about time for me to turn the mic over to Mr. Ford. He'll be pleasuring your ear hole. So I'm going to leave you with a little bit more of the San Francisco Golden Gate Park Band. So until next week, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo.